Hi, Bomb Squad. You're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb, and I'm your host, Carrie Diamond. Radio Cherry Bomb is the number one female-focused food podcast in the country. Each week, we talk to the most inspiring women in and around the world of food. Welcome to a brand new year of our show. It's really nice to be back after the holidays, even though I have a little cold, which you might hear in my voice. The break gave us a chance to reflect on the past year of Radio Cherry Bomb and everything we accomplished. We produced more than 40 episodes and talked to so many cool people. I was very happy to learn that the show was downloaded more than 1 million times in 2018. Can you believe that? Thanks to all of you who listen to the show week after week. And to our new listeners, welcome to the Bomb Squad. We have a lot of great things in store for 2019. We're working on a second show that will debut later this year. We have some great mini-series that will air in the months ahead. We're working on a special live show to celebrate our 200th episode later this spring. And what else? Let's see. We'll be back on the road. The Radio Cherry Bomb Road Show will start up again with some special twists that I will tell you about in a few weeks. Stay tuned. Let's thank our brand new sponsor, Hansom Brook Farm Organic Pasture-Raised Eggs. Hansom Brook Farm's secret to making rich, flavorful eggs is simple. The most possible space, the best possible feed, and lots of love. It's a healthy and humane recipe that makes your omelets, cakes, custards, and everything in between taste better. Visit hansombrookfarm.com for more information and where to find their organic pasture-raised eggs. A little housekeeping. Early bird tickets for Jubilee 2019 are sold out, but don't worry. We still have plenty of tickets available for general admission. Please know, though, that prices will go up on March 1st, so buy your tickets soon. Jubilee 2019 will take place on Sunday, April 7th at the Brooklyn Expo in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. This coming Wednesday is the deadline for our scholarship applications, so don't delay. It's going to be a great Jubilee this year. What else is going on? Starting January 18th, we will have a brand new shiny newsletter featuring lots of fun stuff. Our Chef of the Week, our Eatery of the Week, Cookbook of the Week, and lots more. If you don't already subscribe to our newsletter, you can sign up at cherrybomb.com. So let's talk about today's show. Did any of you make New Year's resolutions or have things you want to do differently in 2019? I certainly do. I'd like to meditate regularly, cut down on food waste, work smarter, not harder. Last year was the opposite of that. Cook more, and finally get an exercise routine that sticks. Will I succeed at all of them or any of them? I hope so. And I've set small, doable goals so I don't get discouraged and give up. But I figured we could all use some encouragement and advice in this area, so I asked Sophia Rowe to come on the show. Sophia, as many of you know, is on the cover of the new issue of Cherry Bomb magazine. I hope you've all seen her gorgeous covers. She's a wellness advocate, a personal chef, an Instagram influencer, and a serious truth teller. Sophia has done a lot of living in her 30 years and has helped so many people through her inspirational Instagram posts. Fun fact, we recorded today's show at Cherry Bomb HQ in Brooklyn, so if you hear any noise in the background, it's what's going on outside. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Since it's 2019, OMG, I thought we would start with resolutions.
Awesome.
Do you believe in resolutions, in making resolutions?
Sure. I don't think they need to be saved for like January. I think it's always good to like pull yourself over and like kind of check your engine light a little bit. I love a resolution. Absolutely.
Because some people aren't into the idea.
Maybe that's how they're thinking about the question. You know, I think that whole entire thing needs to be reset a little bit. That was part of the question too, like the new year, new me thing. I don't know that new me, maybe instead of new year, new me, it needs to be like reset, reevaluate, restart or something, you know, because I feel like we can all, it's not about being better you as if the one that you are, it sucks. Like somehow we feel like every December we're like this crappy person or sorry, like, I don't know what we think, but I think it's just kind of like January. It is a new year. And It's a great goal starter, you know? It's kind of like starting something on the first.
The start of a new year is a big deal. I understand the appeal of making that list of resolutions.
And totally.
I used to do it a lot, and then I would just fail at the list, and then somewhere along the line I stopped, you know, because you'd have 20 things, and that's so unrealistic. 2018 was a tough year. Like, I'm happy that it's a new year. I am excited about starting fresh.
Absolutely. And we all need a good shower.
We all need a good shower. And I do have a list of resolutions, and damn it, I'm going to stick to them.
Yeah. I think that if your goal is, your new resolution is to like, I'm going to be a vegan. That is like, that's really intense. And that's like an entire lifestyle shift. And of course, maybe you won't stick to that. But if you're going to eat more vegetables, right? Or if you're going to like try to cut out meat, like that's just, I think it's just how you repurpose your restart. You know?
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about that. If you are making resolutions, how do you not set yourself up to fail?
Steps. I think it's also like for me, okay, so big one is I want to make my house plastic free. So this is something that I know is going to take a lot of research. It's going to take a lot of time, but it's also like it's doable. I just need to know from the jump, I'm not going to do this tomorrow. But I think it's just now I'm kind of investigating the work, and it's also made me evaluate what plastic I already do have in my house. And the plastic I already have, what am I going to do with it? You know, which I think is, it just kind of creates thought, which I feel like is what a resolution is for. It's supposed to make you think about yourself and your space, which is good. It's healthy.
You know what I think is going to be really helpful to people in terms of keeping their resolutions? A spreadsheet.
Totally.
Do you love a spreadsheet? Many.
Oh, I make decks. I have spreadsheets. Like literally, I'm one of those crazy people that's definitely like, if I write it down, then I make it happen. I remember my manager used to tell me, she said, calendar it, put it in your calendar. Even if it's 5 minutes, even if it's 10 minutes to set aside something, if you write it down, you'll remember. So for me, I'm one of those big people. It works for me.
Yeah, I love a spreadsheet.
Same.
We work with this young woman from time to time named Patricia, and we were talking about KPIs. Do you know what KPIs are?
No, tell me.
I knew but kind of forgot. It stands for Key Performance Indicator. Oh. And
no, never. I would like, not have guessed this.
Very wonky and kind of like marketing and advertising speak.
Sure, sure.
But it's a way to measure a project.
Awesome.
And she said, I'll sometimes apply KPIs to my personal projects. And I think that's a great idea.
Same, same. It's really all about pulling yourself over and investigating where you're at. And I think that if we did that more, we'd save ourselves a lot of struggle and strife, I believe. For me, it's the same thing as it's a green juice for your brain. It's preventative action. It's preventative work. Like for me to assess, all right, this is all the plastic I have in my house. This is all the plastic I currently buy, okay? Each thing, okay, turns out most of the plastic I have in my home is beauty products. Now, I'm going to start emailing all these companies or I'm going to start talking to people and doing some reach out on what I can do. Turns out Diva Curl is totally okay with me going into the salon and just filling up the containers I already have. Would have never known that had I not had my little spreadsheet, figured out that beauty is what I spend most of my money on, which where most of my plastic is at. So writing everything down is like, that's already me killing it in my resolution.
So spreadsheets, it's the answer to everything in life. I mean, you don't have a traditional career.
Oh, no, I don't.
Right now.
No.
And I'm sure a lot of people look at your gorgeous Instagram and, you know, like when the cover story came out, we're like wellness advocate, private chef, influencer,
I do a lot of things.
These things. And I'm sure a lot of people are like, how does she make a living?
I know. It's crazy. It's funny. Lately, I make money speaking publicly. I do that. Like I said, I worked at a company when I was a private chef. Obviously, that's how I was making my money. But now it's kind of like a lot of stuff. I make money for writing. I make money for speaking publicly. I make money to essentially be myself. I realize the privilege there. But I also feel like it's my duty to use that privilege in the appropriate way. And that for me has always been why I continue to tell my story the way that I do. If a brand wants to work for me, they're understanding that this is what they're signing up for, right? But that also comes with a lot of pressure. To me, it's a ton of pressure. So I felt that in a different way than I ever had. Before, I used to just make food and people just liked my food because my food is good. Yeah. So it was really easy. The one thing I trust more than anything is that when I make food for someone, they're going to like it. Really simple. Don't worry. Zero stressful.
No imposter syndrome in the kitchen?
No, I don't have any at all. I feel like I'm really good at making food for a person, for people, you know?
Got it.
But everything else, all the other stuff I do, I still kind of feel like, oh God, people are going to come and listen to me talk? It's so weird. But they do, and I think I do okay.
So how did Instagram become your thing?
It started out with me in the kitchen, and I was just trapped in this kitchen, being this private chef person. And I used to just take pictures of food, and everybody kind of did that. And there's always this weird thing, oh, you're a chef, as if like you have to look a certain way to be a chef. I always got pushback that always really pissed me off. So I was like, well, fine, I'm just going to show myself in the kitchen. And then people were like, what? It's like, this girl actually works in the kitchen. Yeah, wow, this is crazy. And then I realized that it was a lot easier for me to do this and be myself.
But that's always not so easy. You know, you're such a truth teller, and there's so much honesty in what you put out there, but that's not...
It's not. If you love yourself, then being yourself is the easiest thing you can do. Now, it took me a long time to figure out how to do that, but now here I am. Let me tell you, Carrie, there's nobody in New York City that sleeps better than me. I have nothing to... I'm an open book. I'm hiding nothing, you know? And I think that that's a really great place to be. I don't have shame. I don't have insecurity. However... The only reason I know that I feel better now is because I used to have those things. I was like a grade A liar, like amazing liar. Now I'm a horrible liar because I know what it feels like to be a liar. I think that when people say it must be so hard, I'm like, just try it.
You're saying you used to be a liar. What do you mean when you say that?
Yeah, like, I'd be, like, you know, people would be like, oh, what'd you do for holidays? I'm like, oh, I hung out with my mom. We did family stuff. Like, I didn't hang out with my mom. Oh my God, please. You know, like I remember I was in foster care and I'd tell people that I lived with my family still. Just to save myself, just to be like when I look back at it, I'm like, these kids probably wouldn't have cared. Like, who cares? You know, but I cared. And I cared so much about what I looked like. And I think that when people ask me now, how do you do that? How is it so easy for you to be yourself? And I just like, just tell people, just try it. You know,
what was the breakthrough moment?
Ooh.
Or moments? Probably not just one moment.
My breakthrough moment was when I moved to New York. And I felt like, well, this place has nothing to do with anything that I came from. This is totally crazy. And everybody's kind of crazy in New York, you know? And I mean crazy in like a really beautiful way. So it felt like, I was like, listen, you know what? I'm not going home for Christmas. And other people would be like, well, me neither. And I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, well, I actually like don't even have a good relationship with my mom. I'm like, oh, well, my mom died a few years ago. And I'm like, oh, it was the first time I realized that whatever you feel, you are absolutely never alone. And that is the really comforting thing. Like, I'm not the only... How arrogant is that to think that I'm the only girl that has had this experience? And then I realized that I was kind of addicted to being a victim in a lot of ways. And I needed to really break that cycle and just be honest with myself. Like, all the other people that have been victims.
So let's talk about some of the tools that you used. You address some of them in the story with Tish. One of those tools is audio journaling.
Yep.
Can you explain what that is?
Yeah. Well, it started when I was young and my mom was really young when she had me. So she was kind of like annoyed. She was 19 and I was like a little kid, right? And she kind of wanted me out of her space. So she gave me like a tape recorder and like one of those old school ones with the little tapes, you know? And I was like, this is amazing. I can listen back to myself. Like I'd have like radio shows with myself. It was awesome. Fast forward to now, I'm this like weird, crazy girl who's like walking around the block. It looks like she's like talking on the phone, but she's really just talking to herself. But it's really healthy. Not everybody's a letter writer. Not everybody connects really great to the pen like that. Or maybe they sit in front of their computer all day anyway, so it's not lucrative for them. But you need to get it out. And a good cry, that sounds nice in theory. But sometimes you want to have a pretend conversation like, hey, jerky boss, I'm not down with the way that you just treated me in that meeting. I'm really upset about it. You just have it out with him in secret and in theory in the middle of the street. And then you feel better. You know, and I've been doing that for – I have hundreds of hours of audio. And some of them I listen back to and are really hard to listen to. But then I sort of remember that they solidify me as a survivor, not like a victim. So I'm like, well, I'm nowhere like that. I'm nothing like that anymore. So that's been really, really healthy for me. And we all have that application on our phones. Everyone, if you have Instagram, then you have that ability to talk to yourself and record. I also love sending it to people, to friends. It's a really concrete, personal thing to send. I send it to my manager all the time. She's like, you're crazy.
You sent a lot to Tish for the cover story.
I sent a ton to Tish. Yeah, like, Tish, I just want you to know I love you. Okay, bye. Like, I just send these weird sort of things. And I just think they're really sweet. They're like a modern day postcard.
Let's talk about letter writing. So you write letters to
everybody.
Your younger self,
yeah.
Your older self, your future self.
Totally.
Do you write letters to people you never send?
Sure. I write letters to people I don't know. I write letters to make-believe people. I write letters all the time. I think that there's something really special about a letter because typically when the person receives it, they they just have to read it, and they don't, they can't immediately rebuttal, and it really kind of soaks in differently than a conversation does, even than an audio note, something like that. I write letters to my younger self to just sort of read, like, wow, I went through all that stuff. I think sometimes we just hold on to only the yucky part, the painful part. And it's really nice to write a letter to a painful memory when I'm like sitting in a warm, comfortable, just made nice dinner. Like, I'm okay. You know, I think that we forget that, like, you're good. Like, you're good. You know, it was a hard day, but like, you're alive. And I think the letter writing solidifies you as like an alive person, which is really special. And it's also great to write letters to people that maybe you don't know in a way that kind of, that's a manifest property tool for me.
Give us an example.
So like, I remember even like a writing letter to like a dream partner, a letter that I would write to a man that I loved so much, or a woman that I love so much, because I never was really connected to one or the other. And that was a really great manifest sort of tool for me to kind of like, this is a person I deserve. This is a person that I'm calling to action. This is what I kind of want, you know, instead of like just dating people to date people. I would write letters to these people. And when I'd even find myself in a dating scene, I'm like, this isn't the person that would get this letter. You know, like I definitely, and maybe that's like a little like weird and out there, but for me, it really works. What you do, what you spend your time doing is call to action. You are what you do.
What do you do with these letters?
Sometimes I keep them, burn them. Sometimes I send them. Sometimes I save them and put them away. And I always date them. That's really, really special. There's nothing crazier than like reading like what kind of partner, reading a letter you wrote to your partner in 2011. And it's like all different, but it really kind of gets you in touch with yourself. And it's a really tangible way to see growth. And I think a lot of times we don't think that we're growing, or we don't think we're getting better. And like, wow, I was wearing pants that were like way too tight back in the day. Now I can breathe. Yeah, I do all kinds of things. Sometimes I've made like scrapbooks with my letters, and you know, I send letters to my mom still. I don't know if she reads them, but I send them to her. You know, it's not about getting anything back. It's just it's the release of doing it.
It's interesting that you said to see the growth.
Yeah.
That you've done, achieved, accomplished, because I think there's a tendency to think that there is a destination, and once we hit there, it's like mission accomplished. A few months ago, I saw Michelle Obama speak in Boston mm-hmm. on the book tour, yeah. which was definitely a highlight of 2018.
Oh, yes.
I started crying before she even got to the stage.
I was crying watching your story on Instagram.
And she talked a lot about that, about how there's so much pressure when you're younger. What do you want to be when you grow up? And you're never one thing. And how she put herself out as an example of that. Did not grow up thinking she would be First Lady of the United States, did not grow up thinking she'd be the first Black First Lady. You know, all these things that she's done and accomplished, you know, writer, mother, lawyer, activist, all these things. I do think that we lose sight that we are these constantly evolving human beings, and that life's the journey. Totally. You know, there is no destination, and we're just, you know, it's okay if there are 100 different versions of us through a lifetime.
Well, and I almost think that it's like weird if there isn't. I guess that's kind of, and again, I think that for a lot of people, that's a bit of a privilege. And I feel like my ancestors would be like disappointed in me if I didn't do something like this with the privilege that I have, you know? And I say privilege, like I'm privileged that I have like water to drink. Like that's how I think every day. I feel like it's not my calling. It's not like, it is my duty to let young people, particularly humans who call themselves women, to let them know that like the multifaceted them that they feel every day is like, not only is it good, is it important, but it's like normal. It's normal. It's all normal. It's normal for you to like want to know how to play the trumpet and be a supermodel and cook really good and want to skateboard and like be really good at banking. That's normal. That's okay, because we're elevated. We're humans. We have multiple feelings. Like, this is what I always think of. If we have the power to like regenerate after a surgery, if we have the power to like overcome cancer or disease, then of course we're allowed to like skateboard and like be a lawyer. That's simple. That's like baby stuff. You know what I mean? Like we can heal ourselves, let alone like be anything that we want. And I just want people to know that. And I feel like the biggest enemy that we all have is ourselves. I don't care if you have an abusive mom. I don't care if you have an, I had all that stuff. I literally have all of it. Don't have a family. Don't have Christmas traditions. Don't have any of that stuff. And it's none of it's an excuse for me. It
and
used
you're a
to
cancer
be.
Survivor, which a lot of I people am. Don't realize.
A lot
realize.
Of people don't know. Yeah, a lot of people mm-hmm. don't know that. So I lost part of my ovary at 23, which is horrible and scary. And also like a weird sort of like, who am I moment. Like people are telling you like you have to get a hysterectomy and you're like, but wait, what? So I was able to find a great physician that was able to like treat it with radiation and do, I had a unilateral salpingo-oophorectomy, which is a mouthful, but I had part of my ovary removed and they were like, you'll never have a period again. Happy to report, I have perfectly functioning ovaries. They work just fine. I think that as all the stuff that I've been through, I'm still here, I still exist, I'm still Soph, like I still do the work I do every day and hopefully more. And there are still things I want to learn how to do. Like the idea that you get older and you kind of have to stop wanting to learn things is also kind of like gross. Like
no,
it's yucky.
I love lifetime learning.
Right?
I want to learn how to code this year.
Oh God, same. I want to understand code. I'm like the person doing my website, I'm like, in my head, he's like in his house doing like Harry Potter magic. Like to me, it's like
I think
sorcery.
The same thing, exactly.
Like what is it?
One other practice I want to talk about, stress journaling, yeah. Because I had never heard about that and I thought it was really interesting finding sort of the underlying thing that's really causing all this stress in your life.
Yeah, that for me was a big sort of, I was another lying to myself, like, oh, I'm just not doing enough after my surgery. So I did this like horrible silent retreat. It was horrible. It was terrible. I don't recommend it. However, it changed my life. So I did this silent retreat and I go in and
you're allowed a few contradictions.
Oh my God. I go in and of course I'm like, hi. And they're like looking at me, giving me these stern faces like, you can't talk. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I really can't talk. And I have to do this for like a week. What am I doing? So I got this really great relationship with the journal. And I didn't just like write to write. I was writing about how annoyed I was that I couldn't talk. This is effing garbage. I don't like this. Why did I think this is a good idea? And before I got into it, it started kind of getting into, became really negative. I was like writing about a lot of stuff I don't like. And a lot of things that were really, it was nasty. I wish I still had this journal because it was a nasty one. And then I got out of it and I was like, look at all of this horrible stuff. I got to handle this stuff. I got to handle how much I don't like myself. I got to handle how much I don't like my upbringing and how ashamed of it I am. I got to handle this stuff. And I think all this other stuff will get better when I do. And lo and behold, when someone says, listen, Sophia, I'm doing it all right. I'm not doing soy. I'm not doing corn. I'm not doing potatoes. I'm doing it. I'm like, listen. Then you're doing something wrong. There's something deeper wrong. And for me, I feel like it's stress. And the practice is for 3 to 7 days, you write down everything that drives you nuts. And remember, the journal's for you. So you're supposed to be very honest, aggravated honest. Like, I hate my roommate. I don't like my boyfriend. I hate my job. I don't like my commute. And then after that time, you really sit and assess it. And it's kind of nasty to read. Like, wow. Oh my gosh. And what you might come to is like, turns out I only complain about my commute when I'm on the way to work. So maybe it's not my commute. Maybe it's my job I don't like. Or what are some things I can do to make my commute better? Can I wake up a little earlier? Can I plan my outfit? Can I, you know, and that's sort of for me goes into the apex of my brand of wellness, which is bioindividuality.
Bioindividuality.
Yeah. So bioindividuality is that what works for me might not work for Lou, but might work for Sue, right? Like not everything is going to work for you. You've got to find what works best for you. And the best way to do that is write your own stress journal, your own food journal, you know? And even the way that I suggest food journaling, it's not about just writing down what you ate in a day. It's writing about how you slept that day, how you felt after you ate that certain thing. How many times have you been asked in your life, What do you think you might feel like for dinner? So when people ask me the question, how are food and feelings connected? I'm like, how aren't they connected? Like, when's the last time you thought like you just eat to eat? Of course your feelings are connected and they're tied into that. And so it's the same with the food journal. It's the same with the stress journal. It's getting down to the bottom of where something's coming to. I'm all about solutions and getting to the bottom of things. And I feel like in a world of comparison eating, let's talk about what's for you. And I think that when I work with people now, I really try to get to I'm working with them, on how to get to the bottom of that. And I feel like that to me is hopefully the future of wellness, not like juice cleanses and like weird $50 yoga classes, hopefully.
We're going to take a little break for a word from Hansom Brook Farm organic pasture-raised eggs. Then we'll be back with more wisdom from Sophia and the return of our speed round. Hansom Brook Farm believes that organic and pastured is the way to go when it comes to eggs. Pasture-raised means better lives for hens, better lives for small farmers, and better eggs for you. It's also better for chefs who depend on rich, flavorful eggs. Hansom Brook Farm's own flock of amazing chefs, their mother hens, count on it. Inat Admini is a mother hen. She's also the celebrated chef behind Tayim, Balabusta, and Kish Kash in Manhattan. Want to learn how Chef Inat whips up a mini herb omelet with cilantro, parsley, and turmeric at home? Or maybe you'd like to make her red shakshuka, an aromatic, spicy tomato sauce into which she nestles eggs and lets them poach to perfection. You can find Chef Inat's Middle Eastern egg-centric recipes and videos on HansomBrookFarm.com. You can find Hansom Brook Farm organic pasture-raised eggs at Publix, Kroger, Sprouts Farmers Market, Fresh Direct, and many natural food stores across the country. Let's return to our conversation with Sophia Rowe. Soph, I would like to talk about your kitchen. I've had the privilege of hanging out in your kitchen. It's a wonderful, cozy place, very modest.
Very.
But you have some tools and pantry items in there that you love and use time and time again. So can we walk through a few of those?
Of course. Yeah, my kitchen's real simple. That's sort of my brand of food. I think you can make the super fanciest food in a simple little kitchen. I don't think, I have the pasta roller, I have the immersion blender, like we got it, but like it's not like we don't like it, you don't need it. I probably use the most is like my bench scraper and like my microplane, because I don't want to mess up my knives. And then my pantry, that's a little weird. I use a lot of like coconut butter, which there's all this confusion on what is coconut butter. And it's kind of like, what is almond butter, right? It's the same thing. So I use that a lot. I use it constantly in everything.
What do you use it? I use a ton of coconut oil.
Yeah.
What do you use coconut butter
for? Coconut butter is a great way to make something creamy without putting cream in it. Like if you're braising something, or if you're trying to make a little cream, like something a little creamy, some like white wine and a little coconut butter, boom. You know?
I should have asked you this at the start, but are you 100% vegan?
I'm not. I'm a fish eater.
You're a fish eater.
I don't eat any land animals.
Got it. So you're a pescatarian.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fish in moderation.
Yeah. Okay. Lots of vegetables. Also not a gluten-free girl. Gluten doesn't bother me. So I don't like stress myself out about gluten. I actually love making pasta from scratch. For Thanksgiving this year, I made pizza. So from
turkey
scratch.
Pizza?
No, I know, right? I mean, no land animals. No, I made like Brussels sprout pizza and like, you know, I just made, you know, I don't know, very non-traditional, but pizza's delicious to me year round. So I made pizza for Thanksgiving. So
you reach for the coconut butter a lot.
Yeah,
what are some other
I like
staples?
Tapioca flour a lot. I think that's one of my favorite flours that people just don't talk about or don't use. And it's great. It's if you are someone who's grain free, it fries up really nice. If you want to kind of make like a tempura situation, like a tempura batter would be like seltzer and like rice flour, but seltzer and tapioca work just as fine. So I love tapioca. I use that a lot. And then I also really love making pho and ramen a lot. I do that a lot, probably like twice a week. So I make my own like broths with kombu. I use a lot of seaweed, cook with a ton of seaweed, like a lot of seaweed.
And are you always making broths or do you pre-make them?
You know, I always have like a my little pot in the back that I just throw all my like my garbage in and just like once a week, you know, we do like a broth with like peppercorns and lots of fennel and yeah, all that yummy stuff, and it just kind of cooks back there, and then you know, we keep it in the freezer and it's always nice to have. But I love the way it feels to make broth. That's like my favorite. I love making sauce. Sauces are like the dream. They also keep you eating better, because if you make five different sauces a week, then you've got options.
What kind of sauces?
I love making a little like a curry dressing. That's like one of my favorite dressings right now, like some turmeric and pistachio oil. That's my favorite. I've always got like a cilantro lime, some kind of situation. Easiest one in the world is champagne vinegar, Dijon, shallot. You know, I always have that just like kind of on hand, like whatever, you know, around. And then I do like a ginger one that's got Fresno chilies, pickled shallots.
So these are like salad dressings.
Yeah, they're just salad dressings. Or
sauces you can mix with.
Sure, or something
grains,
you can.
Vegetables.
Yeah, you can braise some fish with, or just really nice to have like on some vegetables. It's my way of like planning ahead. I think people think planning ahead means like steaming sweet potatoes and doing the quinoa. Maybe it does.
Yeah. Do you do meal prep?
Totally. Oh my God. I work from home. So like, you know, I love cooking. I guess like, obviously, but it's really so enjoyable to make food for myself. Cause like for my whole life, I wasn't really able to make food for myself. So it's great. Like I'm a creature of habit. People are like, don't you get bored? I'm like, no, I eat the same salad every single day.
Do you have a sweet tooth?
I don't.
Wow.
However, I have the biggest like salty craving. Like I probably eat 10 cups of popcorn every day.
I heard you saying earlier that you don't have any vices except for popcorn. I was like, oh my, that is pretty funny.
It's true. Listen, I go to the Nighthawk Theater with a to-go bag and I get two popcorns.
Love that place.
And same, I get two popcorns and I just, and they just already know. And I'm like, if could you put this in this paper bag, this like big paper bag that I go in there with and they fill it up full of popcorn. And I'm like, thanks guys. Love you. Like, I love it. I make it for myself. I make it for friends. I always have it in my house at all times. And I like to snack for sure, but not on anything sweet.
So you said you could eat the same salad every day. Do you have a signature salad?
I do. Lots of rainbow chard, Swiss chard, radishes, cucumbers, sweet potato, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts. And right now it's a tahini-based dressing. I'm telling you, I got this. I know exactly what's in it. And adzuki beans. I'm really into those right now.
Tell us what you do with them. Red beans.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I just cook them. Like that's, you know, it's great if you have the pressure cooker, but you don't need the pressure cooker. I love to make beans from scratch. They're really, really great. Cooking them properly with a little bit of kombu boils out the oligosaccharide. So the oligosaccharide is why beans probably, if they make you gassy, that's probably why. Your body doesn't have the enzyme necessary to break them down. But if you add a little kombu in there, it kind of like...
Sophia's being polite. Basically, if beans make you fart.
Yes. Yeah. No, when they make you super, super farty. They don't do that for me because of the way that you cook them. So a lot of actually organic, I think Eden's Organics, or they are actually, if you look at the ingredients, kombu's in there. So a lot of brands are getting really smart and really hip to that, but it's a Japanese technique of just, and it imparts no flavor. It really just breaks down. It gives the beans the enzyme necessary to break down that property that humans can't really digest very well.
And tell us about your grocery shopping routine. Oh, are you a, do you like shopping? Do you order everything? What do you do?
I'm addicted to grocery shopping. I never met a grocery store I didn't love. I love them. Even like the weird ones that like have a lot of packaged food. I'm like, this is sad, but like, I love it. I love being here. I go to the farmer's market twice a week. I have to go at least once a week because I drop my compost off there and I can't, you know, I'm not going to leave my compost in my house. Yeah, exactly. So
which are your favorite of the New York City green markets?
Well, I go to Union Square because that's where the compost drop off, but I actually love coming all the way over here to Carroll Gardens on Sunday because of my mushroom ladies over there.
Oh, she's great.
Isn't she great? Listen, I drive 45 minutes to come over here and just to hang out. I love this farmer's market over here. It's nice and it's exactly what a farmer's market should be. Quick, simple, not too many options. You don't get paralysis, which happens sometimes in Union Square.
You're oh like, my gosh, it overwhelms me.
You're like, okay.
In a good way, yeah, of course.
Right. But options are great.
And I feel you probably do exactly the same thing I do. I feel like I have to spend my money at all the different farm stands. Definitely. To support as many of them as I can. So absolutely. Rather than buy everything from one, I'm like, I'll buy my cucumbers here. I'll yep. buy my mushrooms here. I'll buy my carrots there, which I don't know. I guess that's not crazy. It's nice, right?
Every farm's got a different thing. I remember when I used to cook in the Hamptons every summer, I would go to Green Thumb and they knew I was a chef. So they'd be like, listen, these red peppers are garbage, but you got to get these fairy tale eggplant. You know, like every crop has different level of nitrogen in the soil. So like some tomatoes are good and some aren't. It depends on the crop rotation and the crop, you know, whatever. But I feel like supporting as many people and as much as possible is always what I'm kind of game and after. Also, you just taste. You got to taste everything. I think sometimes some people forget that at the farmer's market, you're encouraged to taste things. It's all right to be like, hey, I've never seen that before. What do I do with it? That's super healthy. And I do that a lot too. Even as a chef, I'm like, what is that crazy heirloom thing? Is it good? Does it taste good? What does it taste like? What is it going to pair with?
I think people forget to smell.
Absolutely. Well, nobody. And I feel like which always used to kind of drive me crazy because I feel like when I was younger and I was worked in restaurants, especially when I was in Florida, I'd see so many chefs smoke. And I remember being like, all I can smell is the smoke. So it kind of mess up your sense of smell. But I feel like your smell and your taste are so connected. So for me, the only way to really cook anything is to smell it. You know, I'm one of those weird people too. Like when I go out to eat, I smell things. And my friends are like, what a weirdo. Why are you smelling everything?
No, it's so important. I love picking up some herbs at the farmer's market and just like...
Same.
Breathe in that rosemary, that cilantro. Mm-hmm.
I love it.
So I find there's something like really kind of healing.
Same.
About that.
There is. Like, yeah.
Before
like
you even eat it.
Yeah. Aromatherapy is for real. Why? Citrus always makes me feel awake. Like, why?
And it's citrus season.
It sure is. Now. Isn't it fascinating how the planet gives you what you need when you need it? Like how like cucumbers and watermelon are like so hydrating and they're in season in the summer. And then how like citrus is when you really need your vitamin C because it's like sick season and like the planet's really smart. Like it's good.
I'm sure you do this, but roasting lemons.
Totally.
Like cut a lemon in half, put it on parchment paper and just roast it like you roast a vegetable.
Totally.
I learned that technique from Sarah and Sarah, the two chefs behind Kismet in LA.
Oh, I didn't know that. I mean, I think for...
But take them like further than you think you should. Like black. Really... caramelize yep. those babies.
I remember there was a dish and I couldn't tell you what cookbook it was. I couldn't. It's a shallot dish. It's a 5-hour roasted shallots. And in the they're like, but it's almost like, it's like a torchon.
Like a low temp?
Low temp. Yeah. And I mean, it's...
Oh, duh. A low temp, 5 hours. No, bake them at 450 yeah, degrees
char, and baby.
Burn your house down.
I mean, it's insane. And so the whole idea is that you take a lemon, you put the lemon in two, and then you keep adding lemon. And it's crazy because you realize, too, the shallots have a lot of liquid in them and like they end up juicy and caramelized and... Oh, it is crazy. But it's almost like the idea of a preserved lemon too. Like I love a pickle
love
to pickle
lemons.
A whole lemon and just keep them in salt. You know, what I used to do too when I cooked, I used to preserve egg yolks. So I'd take egg yolks and pack them in salt and they get solid and then you microplane them onto things almost like cheese. But you can actually do the same thing with like, you can do it with anything. You can pack and preserve anything. But I think that citrus is a really, I actually just got a lemon tattoo. I did. Isn't that
you
funny?
You did?
I sure
For
did.
For what?
I did because you
What's
can't really
the
see it through my shirt. So lemons are, everybody thinks a lemon is like the idea of it's fresh and it's healing and whatever. But for me, lemons signify a cleansing. And I turned 30. And this is a huge big year of firsts for me. I have a lot of tattoos and they all mean something to me. And I don't know, some people feel certain ways about tattoos, but a lot of chefs have tattoos and a lot of young people have tattoos and there's a million different reasons to get them. But for me, they're very like milestone driven. When something special happens, then, you know, like I'm writing this book, it's a lot of ideas, get the little light bulb, you know, like everything kind of means something. But the cleansing thing is really big because I feel like I never thought I'd feel so clear and like good, you know, and I just so happened to feel like that at 30, you know, and so it's also kind of a way messaging wise for me to be like, it's okay for it to like take a while. I think that there are so many like, this is what I hear all the time. I feel like it's already too late for me. I'm 23 and I'm literally want to hysterically laugh because I am a 30-year-old woman and I just now feel okay about who I am as a person and I'm 30 years old, you know, and like, I'm 30 years young. What the heck? I can do anything I want. So I think that for me, the lemon really signifies like a freshness and a cleansedness. And plus every person knows that nothing is finished without some acid. You got to like a little bit of vinegar, a little bit of
salt, fat, acid, heat,
you
baby.
You got to have it. It's 100% necessary. And I feel like it's also the finishing step. So it's an ode to like, to feeling like I accomplished something, you know?
Oh, I love that.
It's really cool. Yeah.
Well, I think that's a good place to stop. We're going to do the speed round.
I'm excited. I'm ready.
We always used to do the speed round. It's kind of sad. I stopped doing the speed round right around where we lost Anthony Bourdain because one of my favorite questions in the speed round was if you had to be stuck on a desert island with any food celeb, who would you pick? And my personal one was Anthony Bourdain. And I just stopped doing it after that happened.
Well, it's a new year. we're going to bring it back.
It's a new year. And I also
restart.
You know, I don't want the industry to kind of forget Bourdain. I think he gave us a lot.
Agreed. And, great storyteller. You
know, he, just because he's not with us physically, I don't want us to forget about him.
Of course not.
So we're going to fire some rapid fire questions at you. You ready?
I'm ready.
You sure?
I don't know anymore. Maybe I'm not ready. I sound so sure. Okay.
Okay, so here we go.
Oh, gosh.
Personal theme song.
Okay, you know, this is very hard. And I was like, if it's a song by Freddie Mercury or Donna Summer, who I feel like are my honorary parents, like even like physically, I feel like if Freddie Mercury and Donna Summer had a child, it would probably look like me.
Did you not have far off?
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, I mean, they're my greatest inspirations, but it's got to be a song by either one of them. Maybe like I Want to Break Free. That's a beautiful Queen song. Crazy Little Thing Called Love. That's a great Queen song. On the radio, got to be my Donna, because everything radio, it's like Donna's my, besides like Studs Terkel, who I love, like in terms of like radio.
That's
like
a random name to throw out
in
there.
That most random.
Do not know who Studs Terkel
only
is.
Well, leave it up to the girl who's been like talking to herself and having her own radio show since she was 8 years old to like know who that person is.
That's a good one for all of you to look up.
Yeah.
All right. Most treasured cookbook.
Okay. Okay.
Or one cookbook you love.
No, it's fine. It's a regular basic old cookbook, but it's my mom's. And as many people know, I don't have a relationship with my mother. However, I do have this old Joy of Cooking that's tattered. I mean, it's in pieces. It's like it's a 70s copyright. But it's got some of her handwriting in it, which is really cool to me. Yeah, which I mean, it's got like phone numbers and like weird doodles, and like my mom did not care about cooking, but I don't know where she got the book. I don't know what the story is around it, but I have it and it's very special to me.
Favorite ingredient to cook with?
That is super hard. Well, I love cooking with cilantro, which is so funny because you either love it or you hate it. And for me, if I could have it, I mean, I eat cilantro salads for breakfast. Like I can't have enough of it. Also, probably some kind of squash. You can make sweet stuff with squash. You can make pasta with squash. You can make squash taste like meat. You can dehydrate it. You can braise it. You can do anything with it. I feel like it's just such a – that or like cauliflower is a really big hot one too. I feel like I always end up cooking with that. I remember I made the goal one time at this restaurant. We had to make a nut-free Caesar dressing, and I used cauliflower, and no one could guess it. No one knew that there was no nuts in the dressing, this vegan dressing. It was delicious.
Last book you read?
This is so boring. It was Working from Studs Terkel. It's my favorite book, and it's the last book. I read it once a year, and I had to read it because it's the end of the year is near. So, yeah, that's for sure. Yeah.
Go-to purse snack. And I feel like I need to say that twice. Purse snack. Doesn't exactly roll off.
Go-to purse snack. Golden berries. I've got them in my purse right now. The dehydrated golden berries. They're my favorite thing.
I don't even
know
if I've ever eaten a golden berry.
Listen, you're about to learn.
Okay.
Carrie.
Okay.
Because they're amazing. I love them.
So is it like a cranberry or something?
Oh, no, but better.
But better.
But,
okay.
But brighter and way more floral and a little bit funkier and very, okay. Very interesting flavor. They're great to rehydrate and put in something. Like I did a stuffing recipe with them, and it was a real game changer. It was really interesting.
Yum. Yeah. Aside from the land animal thing, one food you just would never eat.
Oh, that I just am not down. You know, that's really hard for me because I love everything. Texturally, not down with lima beans. They stress me out. I'm not down. I don't like it. I don't love them. I really don't. Like, I love beans, but let me tell you, it's never one that I reach for.
So no succotash.
I'm good. I love okra though, you know, but like, no, I don't love that.
Food that makes you smile.
Anything spicy. I love a Fresno chili. Like the second you say Fresno chili, I'm like, talk to me. Any kind of jalapeno or charred. Anything charred that's got some flame or some fire, I'm down. Love it. Spicier the better.
Dream vacation destination.
Japan, easily.
Have you been?
No, I haven't, which is crazy because my grandmother's Japanese. But no,
I'm dying to go.
Same. It's 2019. I'm going. Watch it, you guys. 2019, Soph is coming to Tokyo. It's happening.
Okay, and as promised, I'm bringing back the question. If you had to be trapped on a desert island with any one food celeb, who would it be and why?
Okay, so maybe it's a little personal, but I'd say Yotam Ottolenghi. Partly because he's just he's such a sweet, beautiful gay man. He has beautiful taste. I feel like he has such a crazy, amazing story. I feel like I have so many questions for him. He's also one of the very few food celebs that's made me look at food differently and made me question flavor and the way that I taste things and the way that I smell things and also visualize things. And it's really interesting for a modern chef to do that. I don't know. He's just really like challenged my taste buds in a really cool way. And I just think he'd be a really cool guy to be on. Maybe just like a really cool insight on something.
Have you met Yotam yet?
I haven't.
Oh, please. My God. You said all that and you haven't even met him yet.
I know.
You would just die.
I know. That's what I can feel it. And I just love him. And I've, you know, all of his restaurants in London and even the restaurants are like, they're like an understatement compared to him as a human. And the way he writes a recipe also is really interesting. And most of them are that I've tried are like super kind of foolproof if you have everything. And he challenges the idea. I don't cook like that. I never want to make a recipe that people feel like they have to go shopping for. However, he makes you kind of feel lucky and excited to be going shopping for these bespoke sort of interesting ingredients, which is really cool.
I hope you get to meet him this year because I've interviewed him a few times and I really had to sort of just like rein myself in and not be a complete geek.
That's how I feel like I would be if I met him, because I just, what an interesting life.
And he's so warm.
And yeah, I can tell. I'm telling you. I just feel like
we're going to have an episode where a bunch of us just have a round table and just talk about how much we love Yotam Ottolenghi.
I'll call you. Please, I will cry.
When we do that.
I just love him. I love him so much. He's so great.
Well, Soph, we love you so much.
Well,
you're
I love
so
you
great.
So much. Thank you. You are. We
Thank
are.
You for being on the cover. Thank you for doing what you do.
That's always baffled me. Thank you for letting me have that great, great, great pleasure. That is to like, it's like one of the greatest things in my whole life. So thank you so much. Thank you for that gift.
Thank you. Have a wonderful year.
Duh. Same. You too.
Bye, Soph.
Of course. Bye. Mwah.
That's it for today's show. A huge thank you to Sophia Rowe. If you don't have the new issue of Cherry Bomb featuring Sophia, you can pick it up at places like Casa Magazines in New York City, Maven Shop in San Diego, and Raleigh Provisions in Durham, North Carolina. Thank you to our sponsor, Hansenbrook Farm Organic Pasture-Raised Eggs, for supporting this season of Radio Cherry Bomb. Special thanks to our associate producer and our very own Riot Girl, Jess Seidman. Jess was our intern last semester, and now she's a full-time member of Team Cherry Bomb. And thank you to the band Tra La La for our theme song. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and the Heritage Radio Network. Thanks for listening, everyone. You're the bomb.
I'll have what she's having.
Hi, I'm Diana. I'm a baker at Smith Canteen in Carroll Gardens. Do you want to know who I think is the bomb? Julia Tertian. I admire her career co-authoring and authoring cookbooks. She's the founder of Equity at the Table, and I love her posts on Instagram with her wife, Grace, volunteering and cooking food for those who can't.